to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast for three Dungeon Masters. I've been doing this for way too long. Talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
Master of puppets, I'm pulling your strings, twisting your mind and smashing your dreams. Blinded by me, you can't see a thing. Just call my name, cause I'll hear you scream. Master. Yeah.
Made me want to pull the guitar off the wall here and jam along.
Yes. Hello again, everyone, to another episode of Three Wise DMs. This is the Rock and Roll DM. DM Dave, obviously, Master of Puppets by Metallica. I was just thinking of it because I think I talked about it one of the last episodes. We went and saw Metallica while they were in Philly. It was great. I was like 15 again. But Master of Puppets, what is going on? So we kind of, and I'm going to let Chris kind of take this, but we're going to start talking tonight about what happens when rules or mechanics or whatever has the DM take over a player character for multiple reasons. But we kind of started on this because Chris ran into something on one of his new games that he's been running. So Chris, kind of take us through what happened, and then we'll jump from there.
Yeah, with a couple guys from work, they're both new players. I'm starting the Tales of the Yawning Portal, and so we're kind of working our way through that. And so we're somewhere in the Forge of Fury, and they encounter a dwarven ghost, and the dwarven ghost can possess you if you failed the saving throw there. And so without thinking, I'm just like, they walked in there, and it hopped up on the first fighter there, and whoop, went inside, and it totally worked. He failed the saving throw. He's like, oh, crap, right? Like how it always is. And all of a sudden, he was in control. And the problem was, while it is cool and everything, the problem was is that the only way out of it, because they didn't have anybody in the party who could free him from this, this possession, was they basically had to reduce him to zero hit points. Where it's so, I'm like, do I have the one guy at work beat up the other guy at work to the point of death just to save him? Like, is that going to be a fun Tuesday night?
And have your DM sort of got me to think join about in
that,
on it,
you know, how it is that you would do that. Like, I came out with a way for them to be able to like break the possession without having to go through something like that, while it still was kind of cool for a moment there. But it got me thinking, like, what would be good ways to handle that? Because it was very unnerving at a point, and I'm kind of, all of a sudden, I'm overlooking and, you know, at all the stuff, like trying to find ways for these guys to get out of it. Cause I'm like, you know, I'm a fan of the players too. And I'm like, oh crap, like they're literally going to have to beat them up. So it was a bit of a stressful moment for me as a DM, because it was like all of a sudden it worked. This thing that I've always read in the description of stuff like, you know, charm person or whatever like that. All of a sudden, oh man, I have control of this guy. And oh, now this is going to be kind of a bad and unfun situation for the people at the table. So what do you guys think? How would you handle something like that?
Unfortunately, it's very niche, and you wouldn't think that it is, because the spell Good and Evil is only a cleric or paladin spell. And if you just don't happen to have one of those in your party, especially a high-level party, you know, paladin, then you're cooked, and you run into that situation. It's really tricky. It's a status attack. I'd like the threat it offers. Kind of like energy drain back in the day, where there were, you know, the undead were so ominous that if they hit you one time, you could lose a level and let you get a restoration spell. But is it really fun to have a level torn away from you after you spent four games getting it? The principle here applies, unfortunately. So it makes me kind of feel out, or, you know, the vibe of the table. Are these the hardcore gamers that really want to push the wall? But in your case, you got the starting gamers. And yeah, that's a real horrifying look from behind the curtain you gave them.
Yeah, I know that I'm going to, like, we're going to hear, like, right now, there's like 50 telephone tough guy DMs being like, yeah, duh, I mean, that's possession. I mean, how do you not handle that, blah. But here's the rub, and here's where I think it stopped you up, Chris, that kind of like, oh, oh crap, okay, is that this game is you're running the game. You are running an NPC that is going with the party, but you're playing very much the I'm just there to kind of buff you guys to thing, not like not get into some of the problems you have when you're running with the party. And then your party is made up of two characters, two guys, right? Both from work, both new players. And that's where this gets funny because you're like, okay, so I'm just going to have this guy beat up on the other guy. And maybe your NPC jumps in or something. Like, but it's
my NPC would have to join in too.
Right. It's a lot different. Like, I'm thinking back to when this exactly happened early on in the Woodstock Wanderers, where a ghost had possessed Tom's character, Sir Morton. Which a lot of you longtime listeners will have heard a lot about with the Sir Morton thing. And like, no matter what we did, we could not get this ghost out of him. And you could literally see Thorne at the table trying to like goad some people into like, okay, here's some ways to do it. But that was with like five other characters at the table. If it's just one other person, that's where it gets like, this is... that's not enjoyable. It can be really fun when you dominate the barbarian in a party of four or five adventurers, and all of a sudden the tank is coming after you and they have to handle it because several people are handling it, not just, hey, Tom, sorry.
No, for sure. It's the factor. I love the idea of it, right? Like it's never really had one work out well like that, and especially with the new players. But it is an odd sort
yeah,
of
like
sensation.
How many times do they just get the saving throw, especially a ghost, because it's like a DC 12. It's like most people are gonna get that, right? So when it actually works,
but it adds a certain level of to it, and it makes it difficult. Like, I don't know if you're friends with the guys at the table, which one do you go after, and all those other things like that. Like, it's a little bit of it was an unexpected challenge in that. I think that module is a little bit more older school. I mean, it's coming from the earlier modules. They sort of lensed it into the details from the Yawning Portal. So it has some additional danger there.
Yeah,
but that
Forge
one
is from Forge is a third edition mod that had come out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but
I remember because I ran you guys through that back in the Pathfinder game. I kit bashed it into a Pathfinder adventure for Forge.
Very great
adventure.
Encounter. Yeah. But no, and it was something I'd never encountered before because it was difficult because there wasn't anybody in the party. There wasn't a actual way to break the possession. The only way to break the possession was legitimately to take them to zero hit points or have everybody run away and come back later. You know, and even then, this person's still going to be possessed. Like, it wasn't going to end without that. And so, like, I turned it into a role play encounter where they were able to interact with the ghost inside of them. Because at a point, I was like, I don't want to go down that path. It just gets a little dark that we got to, like, take you to zero and then nurse you back to health and be like, oh, sorry. And then you're talking with the spirit afterwards. It's not as cool. This way, I thought it added something that they sort of... you know, had to still make some rolls to get through this, but it wasn't that they needed to have that dispel good and evil spell, right? Which you hope you have it prepared as a cleric or a paladin, right? In that particular situation.
Well, that too, right? I mean,
you know,
might
like
have
it's not one that you may not, you know, so it was, so that was cool. Like, but I was, yeah, it got me thinking, like, what are other ways that when you encounter these kind of things, forced movement or where you're taking over NPCs, like, what are some other ways to handle it when you get in that situation where it may be going somewhat not as cool as you imagined, right? Like the picture on the freaking cover of the Dungeon Master's Guide versus how it's going to the table. And you're like, oh, crap, this is going bad quickly. You know, like, what are ways to get in and out of those kind of things?
I'm just going to say real quick before Tony jumps in here, I cannot stress enough that this is very specific because you are running such a small party. That is really, that adds a whole nother layer to this. But Tony, go ahead.
Yeah, so back in the day where another situation where the DM would have to take over the character was with charm spells. I mean, now, you know, the character who's been bombed their saving throw just is a friendly to the target and lasts an hour. Back in the day, you were like straight up mind controlled. And based on your intelligence score, it could last a month. No kidding. So I'm like, yeah, so you're under the charm spell. Go wash my car. I'll see you in a couple hours. And that would be perfectly fine. So you'd literally be under the DM's control. So I'm glad they cleaned that up and brought the criteria in a more tight way in 5e. You took the words out of my mouth. Yeah, I would have start talking to the ghost. Make the ghost a dick. Make him funny. Like, make him obnoxious. Make him make demands. Be like, you're going to put my soul to rest, or I'm not giving this guy back. I can possess him again. Something like that, where you're not, like, coming for their throats. Like the time when one of my players turned into a werewolf, and he lost control of his character, and the players did not have an answer for them. And it turned into, like, a Scooby-Doo chase, where the werewolf's, basically chasing them around the freaking house for, like, hours and around the building and in the woods until I turned back. And then they're like, what the F? And then they could deal with it. But at the time, no answers in sight.
Yeah, Tony, I would kind of go that same route. And Chris, I think you were exactly right where you go with a narrative thing, because that's fun, because then they're role-playing, right? You can even add some roles into it if you needed to, in terms of, like, rolling for persuasion or whatever the hell it is. And then you could always have the character that's possessed continue to, like, try to fight against the possession, and maybe if they give you a good enough reason, they can repeat that saving throw. I know that there's a level of you repeat it at the end of the term, blah blah blah, whatever it might be. But is there
nope.
That for the ghost, it's just you're just possessed.
Yeah, and
right?
That one, you are possessed until you are reduced to zero hit points, or
yeah.
you do the dispel evil and good thing there.
Yeah,
I always keep that on tap.
But I mean, Tony, I agree, that whole idea, like, you, what is the ghost? The ghost is there for a reason, right? So what is that reason? So that's an easy way to start giving out secrets and clues for the adventure. It's also a way to, as Tony said, you know, just make it almost a comic relief situation. Like, the first thing that jumped into my mind, Tony, when you were talking, is I'm thinking back to the movie Ghost with Whoopi Goldberg, when the guy jumps in and he's like, damn, baby, what you do to your hair? And she's like, oh, Otis, you like it? It's autumn sunrise. And like, right, like, you can make it a total, you could go the comic relief route or the very serious route where the ghost has a reason for being there. It has a quest to give to put his soul to rest. It has secrets and clues. I'm thinking back to two things. One, Curse of Strahd. I'm thinking of in the very top of Death House, Durst Manor in our version, from Lunch Break Heroes again. I will always give him that plug. But the nursemaid, who is not a ghost, but she's a specter. You know, and it's not an immediate, I'm going to attack you thing. It's very dependent on what's happening, you know, guarding the child or the child's ghost. So it gives you more information as to what is happening here in the haunted manor. And then the second one I'm thinking of is Dragonlance. When you guys got into the Path of Broken Dreams before, Memories before you entered Onyari, and you come upon the old ghost of one of Isolde's handmaidens, and she gives you information about Lord Soth and about all of this kind of stuff. So those are ways as well that you could kind of turn it into more narrative.
No, I mean, for me, it was the one thing that I took from it is, number one, make sure that you're prepared and that you have a good idea of what you have at the table and what you're going to put in front of them that night, because I hadn't been. I was running late after work and I hadn't. I mean, that's one of those original ones. It just keeps going on and on. It doesn't, you know what I'm saying? It was a series of rooms, so I hadn't checked that particular area, and I sort of reading as I'm going, and it goes in there. But the other thing I would say, too, and I think it kind of blends to kind of where Tony was talking about, is like the evolution and charm person. I think it's better when there's a way out. It doesn't have to be something that it's like cut and dry, but you need to make sure that there's an escape room somewhere in your possession or your charm, depending upon the situation. If it's something that is that powerful where it's going to be causing an upset at the game table or that kind of a thing, is like making sure that you're kind of always staying on top of it and making sure that, you know, you're leaving a way out should you need it, because there may be times where it does kind of go bad, like it was that night where it was a little bit, you know, it would gotten a little bit awkward because my rogue would have had to like start like sneaking attacking, right? Because the other guy's gonna be like adjacent to him right there. So blam, blam, like I'm just gonna be gonna sneak attack damage.
Sorry, on him. Nick, I cut your throat.
And then we gotta meet tomorrow morning. And I'm like, sorry about your D&D character.
You know, I'm going to give you a bit of an out on that one, though, Chris. I don't think anyone is actually a DM until they've dropped a monster into an encounter and not realized exactly what it does until it hits the character. I can't tell you the amount of times. Again, I go back to Curse of Strahd. I had never really played too much with, is it ghouls or ghasts? I can't remember. The one that literally paralyzes you for a minute. Yeah, dude, like they drop like three of them on like a first, second level party. And like I'm reading that and I go, oh, so anyway, and you just start seeing people drop. And like that's, you're not a real DM until you drop some shit into the encounter and not actually read the full stat block. That's, I'm just going to say, that's a hot take right there.
D&D has a kind of different vibe than some of the games. Like when you're exploring somewhere and you're playing Call of Cthulhu, you're never really safe. But in D&D, you're like, I got 30 hit points out of 30 hit points. I'm doing great. I feel comfortable walking into the next room. That's the kind of mechanic that yanks the rug out from underneath the players. And I don't think it's necessarily bad. I mean, like we're presented, like we're talking about, that can really keep everybody on their edge and be like, well, you know, I'm an 8th level fighter. I got 85 hit points. I'm not scared. Yeah, I opened the door. Then you have to teach them a lesson with like 9 runes on there or something. But other spells that take control like that, which aren't uncommon, suggestion. You could throw that on a party fighter and be like, protect me. And in the write-up, it basically says something to the effect, and I'll ad-lib it, you will do this task to the best of your ability.
Absolutely.
Yeah. you're in NPC mode there, dare I say. During that duration.
Roderick loved using suggestion because it's such a low level spell and it's quite powerful. It's quite powerful. It's like command. You know, if you get them, they have, aside from immolating themselves, they pretty much have to do it, you know?
Yeah. Concentration up to 8 hours.
One of the things that this also led me to thinking too, because it's something that I dealt with as well, it's different, but it goes back to those, because that was a good point that was made, that a lot of these kind of things are these carryovers in the game that kind of happen, and some things change over time, some things remain very much the same. And one of the things that's remained very similar but to old school is alignment shifting. This is something that I ran into in Curse of Strahd when you guys were in the Amber Temple and you are making pacts with the Dark Powers and all of this. And we talked about that many times. And both, funny enough, the people on the podcast, both Tony and Chris, failed their saving throw against it. Yeah. And in the full write-up, if they fail that, the Dark Power takes over, they become chaotic evil, they now become a DMPC. The DM takes them over. That bothered me so much in multiple ways. And then obviously we talked about it where I turned it into kind of this more like the One Ring, right? Where the temptation is building because you failed. Like there is consequence, but this idea that, oh, I became a werewolf, I have lycanthropy, I'm immediately evil, I lose my character, and the DM takes him over. And that's the first thing I started to think of, Chris, when you were talking about this ghost issue. I was thinking about like when the DM is like, I just take you over, I'm just, this is, you're mine now, and where that can be not just, it's just like, I wouldn't have seen that to be fun for any of us, for myself or for you guys as players. And that was not where I have two players playing. I had 6, you know, so I had the ability to like try to dominate Hawk and get him to attack you guys, right? I could do these crazy things like Vampire hit you with that intelligence drain, Tony, and dropped you to like 1 intelligence and you just went catatonic, right? Like you can do that because you have 6 people, you've adventured for a long time. It's a different dynamic that's happening. So now you can really play the party off against each other. But things like that too, where anytime where the DM has to literally take the character, what do you guys think of that? I myself, I'm not a fan. I don't like it, I think it's in the realm of this possession issue that, Chris, you were running into.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I think to your point, what I kept thinking of when you were talking about the curse of Strahd bit was like, you're thinking like, I'm going to have to run the game and I'm going to have to run these two players too. Like, they just, like, because it's.
Well, for me, it just made no. It made no fucking sense. It was just like, they're immediately evil. And I'm like, cool, you know?
I guess, yeah, I mean, suddenly there's, I mean, I guess there's some old school consequence there, but I think the way you did it was much more fun because that's the idea. And I think that was some of the, I think that's the main theme is that most of these is that it needs to be staged in the right way for it to be fun. Like, or you need to know that it's coming and you need to know that the party that you have is going to be able to handle it. And then it can be an awesome experience where you can do these kind of things and dominate and suggest, like have the fighter protect you. But you don't want to stumble into it without knowing that it's there. And all of a sudden it goes bad on your two person game or even in some other games. If it doesn't seem like this party is the kind of people that want to try to slaughter one another, or, you know, if it's going to create weird tensions because they don't, you know what I'm saying? They're new to it. They don't understand the dynamics and it feels like sort of like an attack, right? Or something like that. So I think it's that, but it's always, yeah. I think for me, it's always making sure that I'm going to be cognizant of these because it is a little bit of a drag when the DM takes over your character. It sounds very cool, right? And it can create that cool dynamic, but it is kind of like, like, all right, like, you know. But I guess that's the element of D&D, too. I mean, we all fail saving throws and end up poisoned or stunned or whatnot there. But that one just feels like, that one feels like then I can turn around and swing my sword at you. That could be kind of rough, you know. Or if, like, a Hawk turns around and starts beating the crap out of us, that's like, you know. With a group that wasn't as, you know, experienced as we are, that could be a weird situation at the table where it creates a weird dynamic.
And one more time, I'm going to say it in our final thoughts when we ever get there too. There are two players. That is, I cannot stress it enough. That's literally just Tom, go hit Mike until he's unconscious. And then,
I'll join in.
Here's the thing too. Like, what if Mike is the fighter and Tom is the magic user, and like he's gonna fight back and just annihilate the only guy. And now you just have one guy, he's dead, and the other guy is possessed by a ghost. Like that. All right, guys, I'll see you tomorrow. Two people, I cannot stress enough, it changes this entire conversation.
I've played a lot of small campaigns, and the other players doing a lot of heavy lifting. When it's the DM, the DM's playing an NPC, and maybe one or two people are alternating as DM. So there's a total of three players, you know, including that DM NPC. The dynamic is very tight. And if they're really on the ball, they're those hardcore grinding players, they could deal with that. If not, I kind of have the same position I have with a lot of the status attacks, like Chris was just mentioning. I use things like stun, unconscious, paralyze, dominate, kid gloves for those reasons. Dominate allows you real precision, like the NPC wizard. This is really for the players to do to an opponent. But in this case, you'd really get to be like, okay, have Sir Scar use the sun sword and stab the warlock in the chest to the best of your ability. That could get very ugly really quick. Nodding back to some of the older school things, you're absolutely right. They did this stuff all the time. You turn into a vampire, oh, you lost your character. It's like, holy shit, what do you mean? I'm a vampire. I won the lottery. This is great. No, you lose your character. Why? I don't really know. The power balance in first, second edition, oh, cut me a break. There was no power balance. That was the most void, non-existent stuff. And I love those days. Just like they played alignment really, really hard. You know, like you get a minus one penalty for changing alignment unexpectedly. They played that really hard. One of my favorites was the Helm of Opposite Alignment. Yeah, that's a real treat if you really want to put the screws to somebody.
Now, Tony, we've talked about it before in times. It's the evolution of the ways in which people game. So if we go back to the old video games, it was very much that. It was like, kill or be killed, and it is deadly, and you probably won't make it to the fourth level of the game, right? Whatever I throw one of them out there. I can't think right now, right? But like Gauntlet, right? Think about Gauntlet. It literally was D&D. And it was just like, just keep running until you're dead because you're going to die.
Warrior is about to die.
Exactly, dude. And it was just like, just feast or famine. That was it. And then video games began to, then like Final Fantasy and Zelda came out, and you started to have, wait, I have these storylines and my character can keep going. And so these days where you don't have that same, it's very much like, it's always falling forward into more story. That doesn't mean that everything goes right or great for the characters, but it falls into more story. And for me, Chris, I agree. Falling into more story is not kicking the hell out of Mike for the next 15 minutes. Now, that could have been funny, right? They might have enjoyed that. But again, you have these brand new players, so you're learning their style at the time, right? But yeah, like falling, Thorin always said it too. Like always, there's always a great story, like see what the story is. Even if the character dies, well, it doesn't mean the story is over. Where does that fall forward into it, you know?
Well, that too, and there are times where I'm there for the players in some capacity. Like I'm running the world, I'm the DM and everything there, but there's something about it that's their enjoyment there. And I think that the funniest thing about these things too is that they work great when the players do it. Like we often talk about it. When you get this, you can hold person on somebody and everybody blasts
you
can take over somebody like that. It's when the enemy is doing it to you that can get somewhat shady or whatever like that and a little bit weird.
Well, no, Chris, I mean that's a good point because you are trying your best to walk that line between like the servant DM, which we've talked about, and how that's not a great idea and it can lead to burnout. But also the idea that, like Mike Shea says it too, like you're the fan of the players, like you're rooting for the main actors in the movie. That doesn't mean that you just do whatever they want you to do, right? You're not the ChatGPT DM that's just going to be like, well, you just found, oh, you're looking for a Vorpal sword? Well, it's actually in this case here, amazingly, you know? And walking that line is tough because you do find, just like we do, you find a lot of your fun and enjoyment in the game is when the players are having fun and enjoying the game.
Yeah, and I think that it's like, it should be thrilling. So if when the players are doing it, they're going to enjoy it. You'll have fun. Everybody's having fun at the table. When you're doing it, if it's going to enhance the thrill and the enjoyment of it, lean into it, right? Do those things, leave a way out. But it's that idea is that it should be something that the players are going to, it's challenging. Absolutely. Right. Like it could be deadly and stuff like that, but it should be something that's thrilling and something that they're enjoying. Not something where they're just like, this kind of sucks. Like all of a sudden my buddy is beating up on us. It's, you know, I think it has to have that, like that element. Like we still have to be like, we're all fans of the players. Like, I think that's a big part of it. It's like, you know, it's their story. I'm helping them tell it. I'm the world. I have control over what the elements of the story are that are revealed and stuff like that. But it's their enjoyment in my world that makes it fun for me. So maybe that's, you know, maybe it's a bit in the way that I like to DM. But for me, it's that is like I want them to be challenged and feel it deadly, but it should be thrilling. It should never feel like that was where it was like all of a sudden it was a point where it wasn't like a thrilling chase. It was like, all right, go whack on him with a sword for 5 minutes, right? And so we can reset this so that the I have to reduce you, then you regenerate. We'll regenerate you really quick, and then we can get on with the adventure. And it just that didn't feel like it was going to have the same thing. So I thought the role playing made it like. So it was still challenging. It was still scary there. It was scary for me for a second, right? Like I experienced some of the thrill, but it was, you know, in the end, I think it's a better experience. And I think that's the one thing I take from it is knowing that they're there, but having that idea that it, as soon as I see that it's not something that the players are going to enjoy, there has to be a way to get out of it. It doesn't have to be easy. You're going to have to roll or something, but there has to be a mechanic there. There should never be a dead end for something like this, because then it just makes it not fun, right? When you're just left with that, when you're left with no choice as a player, right? Like you just completely removed their agency.
Yeah, I like the way that Tony you put it, because I think there's something to be there's wisdom in it, in that you use a lot of these types of status effect things with, you said, with kid gloves. And I think that's a good point to be made, is that some of these things are incredibly powerful, and depending on the party, their level, their experience, that type of thing, throwing these kind of things out can feel, not that it is and that you're doing it wrong if it does happen, but that it could feel like a gotcha moment, you know, because you know all the things. Well, generally, we know all the things that the creatures are doing, you know, until you release bugbears on people, and then you look down and you're like, oh, they do that much damage. Oh, that was a nat
one.
That was a nat 20. Sorry, guys. I guess this is a capture. I'm thinking here, Chris, you said like this, it never works. You never get this. And it finally worked, and you're like, fuck, why did it work now? Right. And it makes me think of the Dragonlance game. And I had some banshees attack you guys, and you guys are pretty high level at this point, but I'll tell you what, high level people can still fail their saves. And with the banshee, you fail your save, you're at zero hit points immediately. You're just down. And I had like two of you drop, and you guys were flying on the giant bird at the time. Now, again, I reiterate, I had five players, two of them drop. So they're not having a lot of fun necessarily, because they're like, fuck, cool. The other players, though, because they're being attacked by these banshees and their friends are falling off the bird, so they're like, I grab a rope and I try them, right? So it creates a lot of tension. And then the players who aren't involved in the game right now are involved because they're seeing the complete absurdity of the Benny Hill music that's happening because of what occurred, right? So again, when you have multiple people at the table, it really creates that a different type of tension that you can play with.
Yeah, I mean, I was I look for the player's perspective a lot, very heavily. It's what guides my entire DM philosophy. I was a player as a wizard in a group many years ago. It wasn't even 5e. And these guys were, they talk about like playing a video game where you just kill shit, move on, we grab treasure, kill shit, move on, get treasure. That was this group. They just wanted to run around and do that. And we were a low-level party, but all they did was cast entangle spells, sleep spells, and color spray spells. Blind, restrain, put to sleep all these monsters, we hack them to pieces, next. And it was just an endless sea of these encounters. And I'm like, oh my god, is this not what I want to do? And exactly. Yeah, I wouldn't
right?
want this
like,
gotcha
yeah, that's
mechanic.
That's a super cool encounter where you guys like come together and do that. Like, oh my god, we entire. But then it's like, and then we do it every time. That sounds boring as
it's
shit.
It's extraordinarily boring. And if the monsters can do it back to you, then you're not special. Then, oh, the monsters all have sleep, entangle, and color spray too? All right, great. Well, then you're just fighting other teams in a PvP.
It's just a giant PvP wizard party. War, dude. You're
right.
In a huge wizard war, which yeah. Actually kind of sounds kind of cool. I don't know.
It's there's other.
That's for my all wizard party game that I'll run at some point.
I could do that, like, you know, goblin wizards and shaman and all that stuff. But, like, you know, going back to the gotcha, we'll look back at the Arkang fight. You know, I missed the first one, but there had to be like 15 pounds of salt the game after that. Like, we could have preserved all the lunch meat for the salt that was left
right.
over from how that fight went.
And a good point to be made. One, of course, anytime the monsters get you, like, no one likes that, right? But there's a level of give and take with players and DMs, all right? And you make it's challenging, and they, you know, they pull out some of the same stuff that you did. And, like, Thor was running all of those things by the rules, but that didn't help the situation when you just feel like it's just the fuck you encounter, right?
No, and it's like that vibe. You should feel that little vibe, right, when you're, like, you should, like, when you're like, oh, crap, that's a crit. right? Like, or whatever, like that. Oh, you failed that save. Like, are you sure you failed that save? Right? Like, that's
any inspiration anywhere, guys.
You know, and I think if you have that kind of element about it, then you'll be safe. I mean, be careful not to get caught into it. But it's that vibe. Is that it's like it could that kind of thing could feel like to your point after the Art Tank thing, you didn't feel like there was a. It wasn't thrilling. It was just getting your ass beat, and just every possible thing that you did was just getting closed off. So it didn't have that feeling of like, oh, there's a thrill and we're going for it and we just don't get it. It was just feeling like it was a gotcha moment, I think, to your point earlier.
Anyway, it's about time now for some final thoughts, those guys. So this has been a really good question that again, we brought to the table with Chris's experience with the new players in the Tales of the Yawning Porter, which have some really awesome adventures in them. I've run a couple of them.
It's great. Yeah,
they're really,
is really awesome. And
yeah.
Same with Forge of Fury.
Yeah, absolutely. And it has the... I had used some of the Against the Giants from the original one in there during the Curse of Strahd game at one point. I kind of, you know, worked it into an adventure. But some final thoughts on, I mean, kind of the status effect stuff, but any time that the DM, in essence, has to take the player's character from them in some fashion, like what do you do with that?
I use that extraordinarily carefully. You got to reach a room. I mean, sure, if you've got all these hardcore 5-campaign kind of players under their belt, they eat this stuff for breakfast, they're here to be challenged, and, you know, given the business, then okay, then don't worry, we can give you the business. But for everybody else who may not want their character possessed and then murdering their friends or having their alignment changed, you know, there's other ways to handle that, like we talked about. You get possessed by a ghost, maybe it turns into some type of roleplay challenge. Promises need to be made. It reinforces the story in different aspects. So you do have other ways that you could definitely take that. And as an odd side note, I'm going to end. Why do Red Caps have 3 attacks? I mean, I'm sorry. They're these little mushroom guys.
At that CR too, right? Yeah.
Sir William doesn't. He's a paladin. He's a 14th level paladin. He has 2 attacks he's capped. But this guy gets 3. What is he, an 11th level fighter? All right. I'm done. Go ahead.
They're monks, apparently, or something like that.
Master of swords.
Yeah, he's using martial arts. But no, I would say the
weird mushroom monks, though. Like, you've got mushroom cap head monks.
The open mushroom hand. Weird. But, yeah, no, I'd say with any of these, it's like Tony says, kid gloves. Like, it was, but that more than that, prepare beforehand. Don't go into it like I did with some of these things, especially as you get into higher level things and not have a good idea and read that little fine print in the thing there. Because it's, while it ended up being a thrilling encounter, like, it was more frightening for me than it needed to be, rather than just thrilling what it could have been if I had already had the idea that I'm going to need to turn this probably into something like a role play challenge, skill challenge, that kind of a thing, because we don't have somebody that we want to do that. And I think that's the real line through this, is that it should be fun. Like, when we were, and where it's thrilling, when we were on the back of the bird there, it was thrilling, right? It was dangerous, right? And it's like, you see somebody drop, like, that's what we always say, is like, you, as a DM, I just want to have, like, one player drop, right? If I can get one player down in the party, then I'm like, oh, that was a successful combat, right? In many cases, like, you feel like I've hit my danger, like, right? I've hit my danger point for the, for this, like, this combat encounter. But that can be thrilling, but you want to measure it with it, because I think in the end, it's, we're all getting together. The people don't have a lot of time. They want to get together. They want to have fun. They don't want to have somebody take over their character for too long. Like, they love the agency that they have, what little that they, you know, they're going to use in the game. But it's like, so it should be something that you know is going to happen, so you can make sure that you have something in place there so that it stays fun, and that it should be, and it should be thrilling. Like, I'm just going to keep saying that. Like, it should be something that's enhancing the thing, whether, you know, when the players do it, they love to do it. So when they get stunned back to them, it's totally cool, but it should be in a way that's like, it's going to enhance that encounter rather than just turn it into something where everybody's just beating on each other. You know, and it, like, nobody's having a good time at the table anymore. They're just sort of under the effects of these status effects or the spells.
So the audience can guess what my first part of my final thoughts is that this is 2 fucking players. I don't care. I don't want all you telephone tough guy DMs out there who they don't ever have any problems and they kill all their players and everyone loves playing with, I don't want to hear from you people, all right? I don't want to hear from it. The two-player thing changes this discussion in so many ways, because I like this whole time I'm just thinking of like, oh man, like I, two players, I gotta, you know, like they're literally just, okay guys, just start fighting, you know, like anyway. For me though, overall in any of these things, status effects stuff like possessions and stuff or alignment shifts or anything like this that we were talking about, anytime that the DM in essence has to reach over and almost grab the character sheet from you, right? Like they're literally taking over in some fashion. I think the best thing to do is bring the player into that. That doesn't mean that you don't still give them what's happening, but there, if you're possessed or whatever, you're still in there somewhere, right? Like all the movies show that, like they're still in there fighting, right? Even in Get Out, right? When they were in the fucking upside down place, it was scary as hell when I first saw that. Anyway, but bring the players in. Tony, I love, you just said it, like promises are made, right? Like who knows what this ghost or the dark power wants from you, and now you've made certain deals. Like, that's super cool. That is falling forward into story. Like I said earlier, secrets and clues, that's a great way to get this information out or information about further stuff in the adventure that they have yet to see, and the ghost is, in essence, you know, giving them premonitions of what is coming or what has been there. Or like what I did with the dark power thing, instead of this stupid just alignment shift and I take your character and screw you, I brought the players in. I let them know on the side privately, hey, you know, you failed. You are beginning to feel the effects of this temptation. You are starting to go down this path. And they went with it the way they wanted to, where Hawk had just kind of like denied the power, you know, after he used it a couple times and he then turned back into, he went from Hulk Hogan to Hollywood Hogan, back to Hulk Hogan, right? He did the whole heel turn and then the babyface turn, where Sir Scar, Chris, you turned it into this, I have to pledge myself, I have to do my penance, I have to go and find a temple to Torag and cleanse myself of this sin, you know, and you played into the character. And that built such a part of your character. So bring the players into this stuff. That's definitely the best way to do it. That's going to be it for me, though. This obviously was our question that Chris had run into during one of his games. And he is obviously a wise DM because he did not see the stat block until it happened. And you're not a real wise DM until you drop monsters in and been like, oh, fuck. Anyway, so you're all screwed. I'm just sticking by that, right? You guys call in, write in, give us some comments. Let us know the encounters that you've dropped something in and gone, wait, it does what? When it finally hits.
For how long?
Yeah, because that's fun. That's when D&D really gets fun. But obviously, this is our question, but we take listener questions. We are obviously DMs with problems. We've been talking about that. We love to help DMs with problems. So give us your problems, your questions, your issues, what you're running into at the table, and we'll talk about them for the better part of an hour. You can reach us at our website at threewisedms.com and put it in the What's Your Problem field. Always reach out to us by email at threewisedms@gmail.com. You can get us also on Facebook and Instagram. We're active on both those sites. And when you're making those saving throws, that will completely end your character, and the DM will then take them. Make sure you're rolling really good dice so you can reach some really good dice at our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871. If you enter the code 3WISEDMS10, that's the number 3WISEDMS, the number 10, you get 10% off your order. But that probably is not 10% more saving throws that you will fail and then beat on your friend before you have to see him at the coffee machine at work the next day. Yes. I don't even know how that goes.
9 a.m. Like, status call. That's a different vibe.
That is awkward. But anyway, that's going to be up for us this episode, guys. And as we do each episode, we are going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you all at home for listening to another episode of Three Wise DMs. If you like what you heard, please give us the 5-star rating in your podcast platform. And if you want to hear us answer one of your questions, this is something that we brought to the table, but we often answer listener questions. So if you want to hear us answer one of your questions, please send it in. We're always looking for new material for the next podcast. We love helping you solve the problems you have. This is a podcast for Dungeon Masters with Problems. That's what we're really here to do. And that's it for this week. We'll see you next time. Three Wise DMs.